You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, our weekly talk show on Brooklyn's Radio, when we get to spend an hour chatting with some amazing local women with fascinating life experiences. I'm Amanda Weller and today we have three guests lined up for you. Later on, I will be chatting to Karen Barham of Moore Barlow, who specialises in mediation and assisting families to find solutions out of court. She's pioneered the New Surrey Initiative seeking reform to the family procedure rules, which, if implemented, will revolutionise family law. Ivana O'Brien will be talking to Susanna Clem from Platform 17, a charity committed to enhancing the communication skills of young people to ease the transition into the world of work. The workshops are fun and interactive and are intended to make a difference to their personal presentation skills, enabling them to land that all-important job. Starting us off today, I will be talking to Sally Frederick and Phil Darley about their wildlife conservation projects in the village of Chiddingfold.
Thank you both so much for coming to join me today. Before we begin, could I ask you both to introduce yourselves and to talk to me a bit about your conservation and gardening background?
I've just always been a keen gardener. My father lived in a village under the South Downs and he loved the wildlife. And I remember walking with my dad and my granddad, being introduced to birds and butterflies and the species in the hedgerows. So I've always had an interest. And then as I've developed my own garden, I've always observed what's happening. And when we moved into this house, which is quite an old house, we actually executed a garden survey, and that involved counting toads and counting newts and counting slowworms, and suddenly realised how much habitat there was. So I started to become really aware of when you compost, when you turn your compost heap, making certain that you leave it undisturbed. And it's become a great passion for the last decade or more, making certain that I'm leaving space for wildlife in my own garden, and wishing in a way that other people would share my passion to allow the wildlife in our area to have somewhere to live.
That's amazing, Sally, because I mean, how many people get a garden survey done when they move in? And Phil, what about you?
My name is Phil Darley. I'm now a retired school teacher, and all of my life I've been really passionate about nature and environmental issues. Obviously, when I was working, there wasn't so much time to commit to larger projects, so I looked forward immensely to retiring. And as soon as I retired, I joined all sorts of different groups, one of which is butterfly conservation. And I'm actually a transept recorder locally in Chiddingfold Forest for the very rare and red-listed endangered woodwhite butterfly. On the back of that, I joined work parties, and the whole of Chiddingfold project that we're heading up has evolved and come from that. I'm also got great green fingers, which I've inherited from my mum, and I'm a really keen gardener. So this last year, I've turned the whole garden and greenhouse over to propagating wildflowers from seed. And I've literally got hundreds of pot plants ready to go out in the local environment.
Amazing. Well, very inspiring, both of you. I'm going to have to ask you both to come round and give me some advice, I think. So could you just give us a bit of background, really, as to how the village projects got going?
Well, it started with somebody we know, but I didn't know her particularly well. She was a mum in the school, and she walked a lot on what we call Coombe Common Recreation Ground, and there's enough space for several football fields, but there's a huge margin of sort of ordinary grass as it led up to the sort of the woodland edge, and there are various areas where people used to walk their dog, and you know, kids used to kick footballs and stuff in the summertime, but it wasn't part of the pitches. But it was always heavily mowed. The council has the responsibility for mowing it, and it was always heavily mowed, and it was a bit like a grass desert. It was a huge expanse of, I don't know how many acres actually, but massive. And it was, there was trees, and then you had the flat grass. And then she campaigned the council to say, can you just start mowing it all through the summer? Because the council had a monthly mowing regime. And that was back in 2018. And she started reporting and saying, you know, look at the wildflowers I've seen. She started putting them on the village Facebook page, and she started talking to people about it. And then we thought, well, hold on a minute, if this can happen here, why can't we persuade the council to do more? And then a kind of a light bulb moment happened. A group of us met every now and then, and we all watched the Monty Don programme on vanishing wildflower meadows. And we found that 97% of the wildflower meadows in this country had disappeared. And he was walking through this beautiful swathe of oxeye daisies and buttercups and talking about the loss of habitat for wildflowers and then pollinators. And then it's pretty catastrophic as gardeners. If you don't have any pollinators, the plants don't grow, they don't set seed. So we thought, well, we could possibly persuade our parish council to change the mowing regime in several locations around the village, some dry, some sunny, some shady, to say, well, we could allow the wildflowers to return to these areas and it would help gardeners, it would help the ecosystem. And our campaign was to create some of these wildflower strips, wasn't it, Phil?
It was, yes. Obviously, the areas we were talking about are not privately owned. It is under the umbrella of being common land, and therefore we had to get permission from our local parish council in order to go ahead. So the four ladies within the group, we got together with meetings. We put together an action plan that we gave to the parish council August 2019, so just about a year ago. That was approved, and part and parcel of the plan, not only as Sally has described, leaving areas uncut to see what naturally will come up rather than being cut down to nothing. But part of the plan was to create a wildflower strip on part of Chiddingfold Green near to the pond. And this was going to be a completely new element for conservation. We were given permission to create a strip 16 metres long by 1 metre wide. Now, this is where my gardening influence comes in, because I knew a lot about wildflowers, and the aim was to produce something that could flower, produce nectar and pollen for as long as possible in the growing season from spring through to summer. So sourcing suitable seed, because Chiddingfold unfortunately is on clay, which is really heavy and horrible to work. But there are lots of wildflower seed companies out there that produce specific seed mixes for all sorts of different types of soil and habitats and so on. So we sourced seed from them, and the first part of it was to strip the turf off this wildflower strip and then prepare it for sowing the seed, which we did early in this year, 2020. And using some of my plug plants, the idea was to create a real mix of perennials that will come up year after year, but also a really stonking show of colourful annuals like cornflowers and poppies and wild carrot and stuff. So you had the mixture, you had the different heights of plants, the mature plants, as well as the seeds, and it took off from there.
Yeah, it'd be nice, actually. It'd be lovely to hold up to the viewers how it looked, because it's a piece of grass behind the village pond, and the council used to mow it. During the spring, the areas near the pond are covered in daffodils, and then as soon as the daffodil foliage sort of died down, they just cut the whole thing back. And actually, last year, they actually didn't cut the area at all which had the daffodils in, which then allowed more wildflowers to grow, pollinating insects, and we started to see newts and toads fairly near the wildflower strip. And you suddenly realise how much we had changed. I mean, it was a lot of work. I remember, because I was in the early working party, Phil's done all the fabulous work in cutting, as in growing all the plants. But I was out there in very poor conditions. It always rains when you hire a turf cutter, trying to push the turf cutter along and lift the turf. And then we obviously had to move all the turf, even as well as creating the wildflower bank. We think, well, what do we do with all the turf? And Phil had this great idea that we'd create something called a hibernaculum, which is, I guess it's Greek. Is it Greek?
I think it is. It's Greek. Basically, it's an overwintering habitat for reptiles, amphibians, mammals and beasties and so on. So that was created to one side of this whole patch. I have to mention that we sowed the area just before the monsoon, February of this year. And even though we sowed it correctly and weighted it down with dry sand, the monsoon rain collected everything into great big puddles. So we then saw that it was germinating in patches, leaving bare patches. So that was a problem perhaps, but we overcame it by sowing a second set of sowing, which in fact was fortuitous because it then gave a succession of flowering. And then, of course, we had 2 months of real heat wave. So I was determined that this was an example and it was going to be successful no matter what. So being very imaginative, I approached Sally and I said, now, can we use your outside tap in the garden?
We did that. But first of all, actually, we started watering with buckets of water.
From the pond.
So we had, us ladies were sort of scrambling down the bank and then climbing up the bank and passing the buckets. And then as it got hotter and hotter and hotter, we realised this was not going to work. And fortuitously, and Phil's absolutely right, I do live quite near the village pond. So we cobbled together lengths of hose pipe, which we'd lay across the road near the pond and then spray the wildflowers. And we were determined that we had a rota of going out, because April and May it was just so hot.
Yeah.
And also to our advantage came COVID-19 came along. You think, oh crumbs, how is that? And to our advantage, well, it meant that all of the village was in lockdown and people were working from home or they were able to take the daily exercise, and more people started coming onto the village green like they used to in hundreds of years ago, and sitting down. And as the wildflowers grew and flowered, lots of people remarked on how beautiful it looked. They could watch the bees, the butterflies. We had some unusual things, a Campion moth caterpillar, which gnaws its way, gnaws its way into the seed pod of the red campion and eats the inside of the seeds and the capsule before going into chrysalis stage. So we did do quite a lot of monitoring.
Absolutely wonderful. In fact, on that note, Ken, we're getting very close to the end of our time, which is a shame because we've got so many other things that we want to talk about. Yeah. But could you very briefly talk about the woodwhite butterfly and the church?
Okay, Fiona Haynes is the coordinator for the Wealden Woodwhite Project. It's a 3-year funded project for our local area. And as I mentioned before, I think that where I monitor and count the butterflies, Chiddingfold Forest is a stronghold for this rare endangered woodwhite. Great, but should something happen to that colony, then it will become extinct in the southeast. Her funding has allowed her to start creating stepping stones of suitable habitat and, of course, the right food plants for the woodwhite butterflies, which are the two trefoils, meadow vetchling and tufted vetch. And part and parcel of all this, I've been doing work parties, but we were also, I was surveying the local area, and we found that within St Mary's Churchyard, there is a fantastic amount of woodwhite food plants. I got Fiona out to do a survey. Fortuitously, right on cue in August, the first sighting of a female woodwhite was seen by not only Fiona, but myself and one of the church wardens.
And it was official. Very, very heartening after all your sort of hard work and everything, that there was the three of you who actually saw that. Isn't that wonderful? So just very briefly, I know that you're involved with the local primary school. And you have a couple of other things that you're involved with, that you're hoping to get going as well.
Well, the churchyard working party, I mean, we're obviously looking at habitat for the woodwhite butterfly, and we're trying to get more parishioners involved in clearing the churchyard of things which you don't want there, but also to providing habitat. So we have a monthly working party to look at habitat creation, but also sort of tidiness in the churchyard. But now we've started something with the school. I mean, the school is, like all other local schools, is probably struggling a bit under COVID into providing the bubbles for the children, which meant that they had to reallocate the usage of the grass. And they asked us about it, and we said we could actually really help with you on this. So they're actually having to reallocate some of their playground, but they're releasing to us a bank at the back of the school. So where a lot of the children enter, particularly older children, we're going to have a wildflower bank, but also in bringing in sort of typical garden species such as crocus, early flowering crocus, which just to provide nectar for early bumblebees, hoverflies, all that sort of thing. So we're going to schedule a range of planting so that we try and have something for the children from the time that they start back from school, sort of, well, in January, February time, all the way through to the summer when they break up.
And the other exciting thing about the wildflower strip is that it was so popular and everybody loved it. And the only negative thing was said was it's too small. We can't see it from the road. So that prompted us to submit a further plan for 2020-2021. And that was agreed. So we are now extending the first wildflower strip. So all together, we nearly have 50 metres in length that are going to be full of wildflowers. And we are in the process now of sowing and planting that, are preparing that. So that is really exciting. And last of all, on the back of that, so many local residents have cottoned on to the fact that they can do something for the environment. And they've been contacting me, they've been contacting Fiona about the wild, the Woodwhite project. And so many local residents now are reserving areas of their garden where they're not mowing on a regular basis, but actually are sowing wildflower seeds. So it's a win-win situation.
It absolutely is. It's such a shame because we're running out of time here, and I had several other things that I wanted to ask you about, you know, and you're involved with Kew Gardens and the Millennium Seed Bank because of all the work that you're doing. I mean, you know, this really is spreading out far and wide. It's very exciting. I'm absolutely thrilled that you've both taken time to come and chat to me. If anyone would like to get in touch with Phil and Sally, please email us here at Just Women and we'll put you in touch. The email address is justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk. Sally and Phil, thank you very much indeed for coming onto the show to inspire us all. Do come back and update us in the future with how all the various projects are going.
That was me, Amanda Weller, talking to Sally Frederick and Phil Darley. We're going to take a short break, after which Ivana O'Brien will be talking to Susanna Clem from Platform 17.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio.
The past few months have been hard on everyone, including our kids. But there are lots of things we can do to support them. Every Mind Matters will help you find what's right for your kids, whether it's listening to them talk about the challenges they're facing or helping them develop skills to cope with their emotions. Supporting your children's mental well-being can help them boost their mood, feel good about themselves, and be more ready for life's challenges. For NHS-approved tips and advice, visit Every Mind Matters.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7am to 11pm weekdays, 7am to 9pm Saturdays, and 10am to 4pm on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Are you sight impaired or have difficulty in reading text? The Elmbridge, Runnymede and Spelthorne Talking Newspaper is one of the oldest talking newspapers in the UK. They also publish a monthly magazine. If you would like more details about this, please call 01784 435 622 for more information. Or you can email erstn@erstn.org.uk.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Amanda Weller, introducing our guests and presenters this week. We now have Ivana O'Brien talking to Susanna Clem from Platform 17 about the charity's commitment to enhancing the communication skills of young people to ease the transition into the world of work using fun and interactive workshops to make a difference to their personal presentation skills, enabling them to land that all-important job.
Welcome, Susanna. Thank you for finding the time to come on and talk to me today. Before we talk about your current work that you're doing, can you just tell the listeners a little bit about what you've done before? So what's brought you to this point?
Oh, gosh, Ivana, that's a really interesting question. It's
been a long journey really to get me to this point, but I'm feeling quite good about where I am actually. So basically I went to drama school when I was 18. I went 3 years to Italia Conti and did a performing arts course. So all through my 20s, up to having children, I was acting. So I was doing tours, corporate videos, commercials, a little bit of telly, and sort of in between, I've always taught. I've always taught drama classes to children and done bits and pieces of jobs to make ends meet, because that's an actor's life, in and out of work. So, you know, juggling lots of different balls. Then when I was in my early 30s and I had children, my life dramatically changed, because the acting option wasn't really practical, particularly when I'd had the second one, because, you know, you need to put food on the table. So I concentrated on the teaching and corporate side of my business. So I did a lot of corporate role play, going into businesses to, you know, looking at management training, behavioural training, pretending to be a difficult member of staff to manage, assessment centres where they're looking at, you know, looking to assess top level jobs. So they put you in a, they're candidate in a situation with an actor. And all the time through that, I've been doing youth and community work alongside the corporate. So really, Platform 17, where I'm at now with this charity, is an amalgamation of all my life skills that I feel I can pass on to young people. So I teach Lambda speech and drama at a couple of schools in Epsom, and I do freelance work from home. And what I thought, you know, the benefit that speech and drama gives these young people is this confidence, this inner strength. And what got me thinking was, you know, what if these parents can't afford these speech and drama lessons? I work with quite privileged children, or with children whose parents feel that's important and have got and sacrifice other things in their life to pay for their children. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So what I wanted to do was to think about, what about those young people that don't have those advantages, and how disadvantaged then they are going for jobs, you know, in their future. So that's sort of a potted history of me, really, you know, training as an actor, working as an actor, working as a drama teacher, working in the corporate sector. And then sort of Platform 17 for me is this sort of closing of a circle of where I feel my skills are needed now, you know, in my early 50s.
It's a great name, Platform 17. Where did the name come from? Was that something that you came up with, or another trustee, or...?
Yeah, so originally Platform 17 was a limited company. We launched it in 2016, and there was three of us. There was myself and my colleague David, who I've worked with for many years, who writes and designs all the workshop, and our business partner, James. And we ran it, and we got a grant from the Surrey Educational Trust. We've decided that it didn't work as a limited company, because we didn't actually want to make money out of it.
Yeah.
So that's why we've gone into a charity. But going back to your question, Platform 17, so really we're looking at primarily that sixth form age, so year 12, really, or 13. When they're making those decisions going forward, do they want to go to for apprenticeships? Do they want to go to university? What do they want to do? Go, you know, try and get a job at 18. But it's the platform that they need to get them to the next stage, i.e. those skills that, without being disrespectful to my colleagues in schools, they have curriculums to teach. They can't teach those things that are often, really, Ivana, taught in their home.
Yeah, you know, the soft skills that are often lacking for employers, isn't it? The soft skills, that, like communication, the resilience, those kind of things that... often teenagers don't have, because they've never had to, I suppose, deal with... One of my big bugbears is they don't really have to deal with failure. So it's only when they get into the big wide world and they start working and someone says they didn't get something right that they kind of can't cope with it almost.
Yeah, and actually it's interesting you should say that, because when we go into our corporate clients, they say that when they take their apprentices on, there's a gap And it's that what you've said, that they, it's making that transition from school and education to the workplace. So by David and I and our other associates going into the school, we're fresh faces going in. The workshops are interactive. We're looking at these sorts of questions and getting them to answer them for themselves. You know, how would you prepare for an interview? What would you wear? How would you behave? And we do a little, like a forum theatre. And it's really funny because I'm the interviewer and I sit there, hello, how are you? And he comes in and he's all dishevelled. He's going, oh, hi, guys, you know, whoa. And the kids are going, whoa, 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 no, you can't say that to her. You can't behave like that. But actually, you know, we see those sorts of behaviours, but it's only when the coin's chipped, yeah, and the mirror's in their face that they can see what it looks like.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting sort of thing to that they can actually then see and then hopefully adjust their behaviour. We also do a thing at the beginning. We say, right, if you were going to go for an interview today, on the scale of 1 to 10, how confident would you feel? So you stand in the middle, 5, 4. You always got the cocky ones at the end that think it's 10, but generally 4 or 5. By the end of the workshop, we ask them to then reposition themselves, and they have usually gone up 2 or 3 notches.
Before we talk about exactly what the offer is, you mentioned that obviously you like to target students that maybe can't, whose parents for whatever reason can't afford to sort of fund some of these workshops. So do teachers in schools identify those students, or how does it work?
So how we're going to work is obviously we're looking for funding, as any charity does. So we're going to obviously be applying for grants and do fundraising activities. The offer for us will be to go into a school and work with maybe a whole year group in the group scenario. So 20 or 30 at a time. Obviously, you know, at the moment it's difficult because of the COVID, but hopefully next spring we'll be able to go into, say, you know, a Surrey school. And usually in those workshops, you can see some of the young people that are not engaging. You know, there's a bit at the end in Varna where we put them into twos and they do a practice interview. So we can maybe, as facilitators, because we've been in this business a long time, we can see the children that are young people that are maybe struggling with this. But also we liaise with the sixth form staff, and then we will go in on a separate occasion and do a one-on-one with those. Yeah. So that would involve a mock interview and personal coaching, recording it on an iPad, playing it back on an iPad, and then looking at some of the things that could be improved and hopefully giving them that support without everybody else looking on.
Yeah, because I was going to say, actually, because one of the big things that I get from students when I work in schools is they hate the idea of people laughing at them or being judged. It's really, you know, so a lot of them won't put their hands up in class for that reason, because they don't want people to judge them, which is really a real shame, I think, you know. Because just putting your hand up, whether you get the question right or wrong, just putting your hand up for some people takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do they deal with you? How do they deal with the recording side? If you've done it in the past through other workshops, do they take to that well, or can they see where they need to improve on certain areas?
Yes, absolutely. And we make it, obviously, because of data protection, we use a school's device, and we also they can have it emailed to themselves. And then we delete it off the school's device so they can see that that is not going anywhere. So really, nobody has to see it. If they wanted to share that with a member of the sixth form staff, because they do, you know, they do sixth form colleges. I know we've done a lot of work with St Andrews in Leatherhead. They're absolutely fantastic, you know, what they do for their sixth formers. So they would, a good sixth form team will then say, how did he or she get on? What, and then we can feed back to them, and then the learning can continue in school, and then they could even get us back again. Depends on, we're very open to looking at different packages with different organisations according to their needs, because we've got to be bespoke, because everybody's individual, every sixth form is individual in the way they work. But the fact that David and I, sorry, I'm banging the desk, the fact that David and I are actors, we're not teachers, the fact that we've worked in many, many organisations, and so there we can see how the workplace operates. We are, with respect to teachers, a little bit more qualified for knowing what's out there in the outside world, yeah, rather than the school. Because a school, like any organisation, has its own code, but a corporate organisation has a very different code of behaviours.
And would you agree, obviously you tackle lots of different issues, but would you agree, for example, in relation to exam stress, when some of these kids get really, really anxious, that one of the things that is really helpful is a different breathing technique?
Otherwise, oh, when you... absolutely. Thanks for that, because that's something that we take for granted as actors. I say to my drama students, if you go to drama school, you'll spend most of your time lying on the floor breathing, and they hate it because they want to get the text, they want to act. But yes, he says from the diaphragm, we breathe in, the diaphragm expands, it supports the voice. And when we're nervous, where does the voice go, Ivana? What happens to the voice, I'm asking you?
It restricts, doesn't it? Obviously, you start breathing high in the chest and the throat.
Here into the throat, like when you're upset, and it gets here and it starts to get shallow. So immediately, by giving them those breathing techniques, it centres them and calms them. So yeah, that's a really good point. And as actors, we take that for granted because we've had 3 years of training of that. So we look at breathing, we look at eye contact. We look at, very, very interesting, that first impression. So we do a very quick exercise where I come in through the door and literally within 3 seconds, they've said, you're arrogant. You're tired. You look like you can't be bothered. And they're getting that impression straight away. And then we look at the psychology behind that. So you get that first impression. Then you spend the rest of the interview trying to undo that first impression in your mind. I'm sure you've been on an interview panel and you've sort of had a similar experience.
Yeah, and it's hard for teenagers because on the whole, I wouldn't say all teenagers, but a lot of teenagers find it hard to make eye contact. It's not something that's common for them. So just being taught how to do that is a great skill, actually. It's a great thing to learn.
Absolutely. It's invaluable, and the spoken word and social interaction is something that we now, I know, and I'm really hoping that from March onwards is going to be paramount in all of our lives, because I think we really missed it in this time.
Yeah. What do you think some of the main challenges have been for young people in particular in relation to all these times? I know it's uncertain for them, it's not known about their future. Have they spoken to you and said, like, we're worried about this? This is what some of our challenges. What do you feel?
They're worried that, I know my own son's applying for drama schools and universities this year, and it's the fact that it's online. There's something about being in a room with somebody that is so much better for interviews, I think. It's your body language that you can't necessarily show in a such a small space. And also it's that thing of, you know, a one-to-one is fine online, but it's that, how do you interact in a team? So how do you, you know, I think it's that thing of as human beings, we need to be in teams. We need to interact with other people. And I think that teenagers, thank God they went back to school. I think if they hadn't gone back to school, it would have been catastrophic, but they at least are having that interaction in the week, and they're not silo working anymore. But yes, they're worried about the future. They're worried that there's no money being put into apprenticeships. They're worried about the lack of opportunity. Even getting a normal job like in Sainsbury's is competitive. It's hard for them. And I do feel that my role in all of this is not only with Platform 17, but for me personally, whenever the news reports anything, I feel it's always the care homes they're showing and the older people and the people that are going to potentially die from the virus. What about our young people that could be a lost generation if we don't do something about it? So for me, that's my job, whether it be Platform 17 or Susanna, a drama teacher, or just in my local area of Epsom and Yule, giving those young people their voice back and their chances back is my big mission. And I know that you do a lot of work with your youth, so you could probably concur with that, Ivana.
Yeah, definitely. I can't believe the time is nearly up, Susanna. Before we sort of wrap it up and get the website information, you could talk to a younger you. What would you say to her?
Be yourself, trust your instincts, and don't be afraid of failing. Go for it. You pick yourself back up and find something else, and people will respect you. But not going for it, you might end up regretting it.
Brilliant. Fantastic wise words. Thank you, Susanna. So if people want to contact you, how can they do that?
We've got a website, which is Platform 17, and it's 7 the number, platform as in registration platform, 7 the number, TWN, platform17.co.uk. There's an info button on there, and one of us will get back to you.
Thank you so much.
That was Ivana O'Brien talking to Susanna Clem from Platform 17. We're now going to take a short break, but don't go away, as we'll be back straight afterwards with me chatting to our final guest today, Karen Barham of More Barlow, about mediation.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
Hair Mechanics is Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group, with two superior salons, one in the heart of West Byfleet and the second in the Bourne Valley Garden Centre of Addlesden. Hair Mechanics offers hairstyling and finishing, beauty and holistic therapies, nail treatments, tanning and electrolysis. For our office promotions, contact information and more, please see our website hairmechanics.co.uk or call 01932 350 877. Hair Mechanics, Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group.
Hi, this is Helen at the Marianne's Community Cafe opposite Debenhams in Staines. We're busy serving teas, coffee and light refreshments, plus some delicious cakes daily. We also have a welfare benefits advisor for all members of our community who will help with confidential advice and support with form filling on welfare benefits. And our trained team will help with all aspects of care, support and more. When you bring a friend, their first regular tea or coffee is on us, based on one visit per day. Find us on Thames Street in Staines. Marianne's is operated by Surrey Disabled People Partnership. Find out more on sdpp.org.uk.
If you love film music of all kinds, then Hunter's Hollywood Hits and Britflix is the show for you. Every Thursday, escape into the exciting world of the movies with soundtracks that transport you right into the films. From special shows dedicated to legendary composers to theme shows dedicated to different genres, you can hear a mixture of classic themes as well as well-known songs that feature in films. So, all you film fans, be sure to catch Hunter's Hollywood Hits and Britflix with me, Suzanne Hunter, every Thursday at 9 p.m, only on Brooklyn's Radio.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Amanda Weller, introducing our guests and presenters this week. Our next guest is Karen Barham of More Barlow, who will be chatting to me about her role as a mediator and about helping many families to find solutions out of court. She has pioneered the New Surrey Initiative, seeking reform to the family procedure rules. If implemented, this will revolutionise family law by improving the experience and outcome of separating and divorcing families, as well as easing the unrelenting pressures on the overcrowded family courts, which is particularly important now as lockdowns bring on a new backlog of court cases.
Lovely to have you here, Karen.
Thank you.
I'd like to start by asking you first to tell us a bit about your background, please.
I'm a solicitor. I've been qualified for 30 odd years and I now practice exclusively as a mediator and parenting coordinator. So what I do is work with the couple to try and make arrangements for their children and their finances. A lot of my work is with couples who want to get it right for their children. And so I support a conversation about the messages that they need to deliver for their children. For some parents, it's too difficult to work in the same room. And so I might do it by separate meetings, meeting with mum one day, dad another day. But I'm here effectively to put the needs of children above any other issue, to resolve issues that need to be resolved, and certainly to reduce conflict, because what we know is that high levels of unresolved parental conflict are the single biggest determining factor in terms of a child's future life chances. The higher the conflict, the less well that child will fare.
That makes total sense, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, to me that is very obvious, but it's very key to these kind of situations where emotions run high and the ability to be reasonable can often fly out of the window, actually, can't it?
Well, it's difficult. I've been divorced. I think we all know people that have. It's tough. People are having a tough time. When people are angry and anxious, they are very vulnerable to manipulation. Mm. And of course, in the wrong hands, I think conflict is highly addictive. And then it sets a case in a really terrible direction. So those of us that do this work will always seek to put the needs of children above any other issue. We'll try and direct our clients to have the right sort of support, whether that's emotional support, looking after themselves, and do everything we can to at least steady the ship before perhaps we set a course in terms of the future, the journey. There is no doubt that the family court currently is absolutely near breaking point, and that so many of these families actually don't need to be in court because there are better ways of trying to deal with what for many people are emotional rather than legal issues.
Yes, no, I totally get that. I suppose there's a bit of conflict because with the child's needs and the need to reduce the load on the courts, that's one aspect. The other aspect, of course, is that many solicitors are fee earners and have enormous pressure to bring in those fees, and so actually exacerbating that conflict rather than trying to resolve it is something that is from a business perspective for their firm is actually better than resolving it. So there's a slight clash there, isn't there?
Well, I think there can be a tension, but those of us that do this work, I think, in a responsible way, will always be a member of Resolution, the National Association of Family Law Professionals, that subscribe to a code of ethics, that the needs of the child must come first, that we must do everything we can to reduce conflict. And so people that work like me, I mean, I've never been busier, even during the lockdown. I'm doing all my meetings by Zoom. So a good professional will always be in demand. And there are better ways of looking after people than sending them to court and running a case to sort of £70,000-£100,000, typically for a London Surrey case, are the combined costs in taking a case all the way to a final hearing. So a good practitioner will be someone who is in demand, who works ethically, is technically good, but meets the needs, not just of their client, but the needs of the whole family. And I can't see any child being helped by a reckless solicitor that runs a case unnecessarily, fanning the flames of conflict. I mean, to my mind, they're actually no better than a crack dealer selling drugs on a street corner, because conflict is very addictive. And if solicitors just keep giving what their client needs, which is more conflict, they're not actually helping them to get better, that they're just making it worse.
So with all this in mind, you are spearheading something quite extraordinary. Would you like to tell me about the Surrey Initiative?
Well, as a solicitor of many years, in the way that I work now, it seems to me that there are many families that can be assisted, not by taking their issues to the court, which, as I say, unless there are real legal issues or a need for court protection, and of course there are families that need the court's intervention and protection, but many others can be directed away from the court by a whole range of out-of-court processes. And although currently the law requires the judges on any cases that go before them to ask, is mediation suitable? Have you thought about an out-of-court process? Very few judges are actually applying what's known as the Part 3 test. And so what I have pioneered in Surrey is the Surrey Initiative, which actually requires solicitors to invite the other solicitor to explain out-of-court options to their client and to invite them to engage in a process. And I'm actually pushing all the way for a change in the law so that the courts can actually direct cases out of court into one of the other options, mediation, arbitration, roundtable informal meetings. All of these processes with good professional support will look after a family much more holistically than actually staying in court, because what we know is that court, by its very nature, of course, is designed to focus on the differences between people. Nobody puts a statement into court saying the other person's an absolutely terrific parent. The whole system is designed to focus on their differences. And of course, if parents get beyond hailing distance of one another with lengthy, expensive court proceedings, it's very difficult for them to come back actually and think about cooperative co-parenting. So that's what I'm doing. I have to say the idea was picked up by some of the country's leading family judges, and I've been part of the Family Solutions report, which has just come out, which is now looking to make a generational change in terms of how we manage family breakdown, keeping cases out of court, looking much more holistically at the needs of families, putting the children's interests above everything else, and offering children of the age of 10 or above the opportunity to have their voice heard by someone like me who is qualified to meet with children. And I think that's a game changer.
Yes, absolutely. I would imagine that's, absolutely. It must be critical if a child's voice can be heard in a neutral way that allows everything to settle more easily in the long run. It's got to be nothing but good, hasn't it?
Well, the report is framed, what about me? And it is exactly about that keeping cases out of court, but often with someone like me. I describe myself as a peacemaker and a deal broker. I'm there to hold the family, to try and deal with small issues, or at least stop things deteriorating even further, and then start to make the necessary changes so that, you know, most children deserve the right. There are exceptions, obviously, safety and welfare, addiction issues. But what we know is that children's best interests are served by having a full and loving relationship with both parents. And when their parents are having a tough time to work this stuff out between them, they need to be in safe hands. And, you know, we know when a case has gone well, when we've managed to deal with issues as they've arisen, parents can go to parents' evenings together. And actually, when you look at it 10, 20, 30 years later, that they're both sitting at their child's top table at their wedding, where the conflict gets so bad, these parents struggle to be in the same county as one another. So it is about a holistic approach, providing legal information, support. If it is not safe for parents to work together or for a parent to see a child, then we're proposing in the report the safety pathway so that the court can be much more involved in those children's lives. But I think we need a generational change in terms of how we deal with conflict.
So are you suggesting the court has more powers, should they need them, than they currently do as well?
Well, what I'm suggesting is that because the court is so overloaded with issues that really should not be before a judge, these are cases that don't require a legal determination, but people do need support and they do need processes to help resolve them, is that we're asking the court to start to refer matters out much more readily than they have done, leaving the courtway path for those families that really need the state's intervention.
And do you think there is enough clout from that perspective, from the state, the intervention side? Is there other changes that you would like to see there as well?
I think we've asked in this report for there to be one single minister that manages children and family breakdown. Currently, that falls across 13 government departments.
13?
There is no joined up thinking, and we're asking for joined up thinking such as they have in Wales. We are asking for and of course, some of these interventions will require funds, and we're being asked to run effectively on a shoestring. But that somehow there is signposting for people to have perhaps one professional like myself to give legal information and to support families through issues to resolve them as and when they arise. We have achieved a divorce course reform, which comes in the autumn. One of the things I've apologised to for to clients for decades is truly the diabolical state of the law on divorce in this country. That actually, unless parents, people are prepared to wait for 2 years or more, one of them has to make some allegation of bad behaviour of the other. Mm-hmm. And it's what I call the squeezing the toothpaste tube from the wrong end. One of them has to say five or six slightly rubbish things about the other. Now, when we're trying to reduce the heat, to actually have to crank it up and make allegations of bad behaviour one against the other, I think has been truly diabolical. We now have reform. It's coming in the autumn. That certainly will help.
That's amazing. So previously or up till now, 2 years was needed, or else these allegations or these. Yeah. So now there will be no need for that. You can... Is that how that will work then?
So what we will expect the law to is to provide is to take away fault. Because currently, and actually until the new law is with us in the autumn, unless the parties have lived apart for 2 years or 5 years, which evidences the breakdown of their relationship, one of them has to either accuse the other of adultery or unreasonable behaviour, which is by far the most frequent petition fact for the petition. And we don't think it's helpful to say, I know you want to work here in a very cooperative way, reduce the intensity, but I'm really sorry, to get divorce proceedings underway, one of you is going to have to say some pretty rubbish things about the other. I mean, it's diabolical. It's not fit for purpose, and it's not what people want.
No, I'm sure, because you know, if people are managing to separate in a even, you know, a half sort of well managed way, reducing the emotions even before they get to you with your advice to do that. Yes, I mean it all makes perfect sense. Can I just, before we run out of time, which we're going to do quite soon, I know that you're very involved with a local football club, with Milford Pumas, as a welfare officer. And before we came on air, we were talking about the lockdown and your role as a welfare officer. And I just would love to discuss that very briefly before we part, because I was absolutely staggered by your experience as far as how much involvement you've had recently over this period of lockdown, few months. Yes.
So I'm a welfare officer for Milford Pumas, and that would be to deal with health and safety issues and conduct, and sometimes if there are sort of, you know, verbals at a game, etc., etc. So I deal with maybe typically two or three skirmishes a year. I don't mean where it becomes physical, but where perhaps somebody has you know, said something inappropriate, or the coaches have said something inappropriate, or indeed a child or young person. I think what staggered me just before this lockdown is that each weekend I was dealing with two or three issues a weekend, and it sort of dawned on me that probably is a litmus test in terms of the pressure that people are under. We need to find better ways to resolve our conflict generally. I mean, I've often said, you know, if we thought there was the single thing we could do was probably to reduce the tempo in EastEnders, etc. The way that people seem to feel that, you know, they need to shout and scream and yell at one another. Well, of course, if you know, add into the mix a lot of raw emotion, whether it's actually in family breakdown or on the touchline at football, we need to become much more sophisticated in the way in which we try and deal with issues. Whether it is at Milford Pumas or hopefully changing the divorce and separating family landscape, I'm just in my own way trying to do my bit.
Well, it all sounds amazing. You have a very calm aura around you, and I'm sure anybody who has the pleasure of dealing with you will come away feeling more balanced and less raw as a result of it. You're doing amazing work, it sounds to me. Do come on and tell us how the next phase of your application to change the law goes in a few months' time, if you'd like to do that. I'd love to hear an update on that.
I'd be delighted, and thank you for having me.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Karen, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Is at Moore Barlow, which you can, is MORE Barlow. We have offices in Guildford and Woking, and then down towards Lymington, Southampton, etc. If you're looking for a solicitor, a professional, a mediator, please look at the Resolution website. The practitioners there subscribe to the Code of Ethics, which is about putting the needs of children above everything else and reducing the hate.
That's wonderful. I hadn't heard of the Resolution website. That's a really fabulous tip to end on. Thank you very much indeed. It's all gone very quickly. And my thanks to Karen Barham of Moore Barlow.
I'd like to thank all our guests today on Just Women. That's Sally Frederick, Phil Darley, Susanna Clem and Karen Barham. I'd also like to thank our presenter, Ivana O'Brien, as well as the show's producer, Graham Laycock. We're always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives, so if you know of someone who you think should be on our show, please email their contact details to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk and we'll get in touch with them. You can see details of previous and future guests on our website, which is brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen. You can also find us on Facebook under Just Women at Brooklands Radio, and if you're on our page, please remember to like us while you're there. Thank you for listening. Join us again next week for Just Women at 1 p.m. on Tuesday and repeat it again at 8 p.m. on Thursday. You can also discover more episodes on the Just Women page of the Brooklands Radio website. Goodbye from me, Amanda Weller. See you next time.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio,